This is Steve Sherlock on another Franklin Matters radio show, number 732 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the special school committee meeting held Wednesday, February 16, 2022. There were two items on the agenda, one a response to an open meeting law violation claim, and the second, the school district mask policy, now that DESE had ended their state rule effective February 28, 2022. The meeting scheduled for 5 p.m. actually started at 5:26 and runs 55 minutes. The show notes include the meeting agenda and links to my notes. So let's listen in.
Thank you everyone for your patience as we try to handle the technology issues. All right, so time being 5:26, we called to order the special school committee meeting. I'm going to take a roll call attendance. Camille Bernstein?
Here.
Dave Callahan?
Here.
Al Charles?
Here.
Dave McNeil?
Here.
Elise Stokes?
Here.
Megan Whitmore?
Here.
And Denise Spencer? Here. Okay. All right, so before we begin, I would just like to remind the audience that this is a business meeting which is taking place in public. As such, there are expectations of conduct within the council chambers for any committee or council holding meetings in this building. Certain behavior will not be tolerated. If an audience member persists in improper conduct, they will be afforded one warning. If the behavior continues, the chair is authorized to have the individual removed. We welcome the public to come and sit in our business meetings, but not if it impedes our ability to do business for the district. All right. Well, first on the agenda is discussion only. Response to open meeting law complaints against public officers, namely the members of the school committee, filed with the committee by Kyle Thompson and dated February 3rd, 2002. Okay, so our letter dated February 14th, 2022, regarding the open meeting law complaint dated February 3rd, 2022. Dear Mr. Thompson, this letter is in response to your complaint dated February 3rd, 2022, alleging violations of the open meeting law by members of Franklin School Committee. On February 8th, 2022, the committee met to consider your complaint and voted to provide you with this response. The open meeting law does not prohibit all communications among school committee members. Instead, it requires that all meetings of a public body must be posted and open to the public with limited exceptions. Generally, a meeting is a deliberation by a public body with respect to any matter within the body's jurisdiction, and a deliberation is an oral or written communication through any medium, including electronic mail, between or among a quorum of a public body on any public business within its jurisdiction. With respect to the endorsements of Ms. Rausch, each member of the committee who endorsed Ms. Rausch spoke with Ms. Rausch individually and endorsed her individually. The committee did not act as a body to endorse Ms. Rausch. Any endorsement or discussion of the endorsement of a candidate for state office by one or more members of the committee would not constitute a deliberation or meeting governed by the open meeting law. Finally, and while this goes beyond the scope of the open meeting law, we note that the Massachusetts State Ethics Commission has advised that elected public employees are not prohibited from identifying themselves by their individual official titles in endorsing other candidates for elected office. Based on the foregoing, there has been no violation of any law as alleged by your complaint, and the committee does not intend to take further action in response to your requests. Sincerely, Denise Spencer, Franklin School Committee Chair. I would just like to add, in addition to working with our attorney, which costs the district money, we worked with the Massachusetts State Ethics Commission, also in communication with the Massachusetts Association of School Committees, who noted endorsements by elected officials are highly protected, unrestricted free speech, and that school committee members may and do endorse candidates all the time, usually while identifying themselves as local elected officials. It is also common for candidates receiving those endorsements to report on who has endorsed them. Endorsements by elected officials are not illegal or even inappropriate for their work. Individual endorsements and those aggregated from individual endorsements are not open meeting law violations because free speech is highly protected in Massachusetts. If anyone has further questions, they can reach the Massachusetts State Ethics Commission at 617-371-9500. Okay, on to agenda item number two, discussion, action, possible vote, Dr. Hearn, policy EBCFA.
Sure, thank you. I'm going to get the screen up. This evening as it relates to masking in public schools. This is coming with the governor and the commissioner of education having announced last week that the Department of Education will not extend the mask mandate in public schools beyond February 28th. So I prepared some information for you this evening from MASC as well as here in our local district for your consideration. And with that, I will. So just in terms of process, the Department of Education has had a mandate in place for this school year. And on February 9th, they made the announcement that they will not renew the state mask requirement. I will, throughout this presentation, note that masking on buses and masking in health offices are governed by two other rules. And so it does not pertain to them. The absence of a state mandate then has the matter referred to local policy, and the Franklin School Committee has a policy in place, which has been in place since, I want to say, August of 2020, EBCFA, with face coverings of the nose and mouth must be worn by all individuals in school buildings and on school transportation. You added that the district may modify its requirements in accordance with DESE guidance, which you did back in November in advance of a December brief window time period where the high school had masks optional for vaccinated students. And that was open at the time that you approved that. Unvaccinated individuals were required to mask, and you had set a threshold of a 4% positivity in town as being the point where masks would be required again. And as you know, the Omicron surge happened, we had numbers go up, and so they've been masking at Franklin High School since. Sorry, this is a little awkward because I'm running the computer over there. So I added just this one article from the Washington Post. There's lots and lots of information out there and people weighing in from physicians and epidemiologists, but I thought this one particular individual, Dr. Joseph Allen, has been a voice throughout the pandemic, including things like ventilation, and an expert from Harvard. And Dr. Allen had an opinion article and cited these four areas of indicators for decision makers to be considering in lifting government restrictions. And to me, this kind of echoed what Governor Baker and Commissioner Riley had outlined in their press conference in terms of wastewater data and the trends there, which is a leading indicator of COVID cases and COVID spikes. Healthcare capacity, what are we seeing in Massachusetts as it relates to hospitalizations, and then risk factors, including things like age, vaccination rate, and comorbidities. They also talked about the risk of students' educational risks as well. So I thought that for the community's sake and for the community's sake, this might be an article people may want to consider. Sorry, this is not the computer. So starting with the wastewater data, this is the latest MWRA data from February 14th, indicating what we had heard of and had expected back in December would be kind of the big spike and having it fall, like many other indicators are falling at this time. So just to sort of cut to the chase and then get to some of the data, I'm presenting you this evening with a recommendation, the language of which is based on the revised MASC model policy, which came out on Monday. which is that it would be strongly recommended that unvaccinated or otherwise immunocompromised individuals wear masks in school buildings and on school grounds, even when social distancing is observed. And that individuals who are fully vaccinated are not required to wear a mask, but may do so if desired. So that's pulled directly from the MASC model policy. The suggested implementation timeframe, and I'll lay out some reasons why tonight, would be beginning Monday, February 28th for all schools in Franklin. Although I would put out there that the high school would ask for consideration for either tomorrow or Friday based on the waiver that they have from the department. As you might imagine, with the news, mass compliance is becoming increasingly difficult to monitor at the high school because the students did have masks optional for 3 days and there was the waiver. But we have not returned to masks optional at the high school because of the 4% threshold that you had agreed to. We are not at 4%, and I don't think that threshold, as I shared at the last meeting, really is very reliable anymore because there are so many at-home tests happening that aren't reported that I think that those incidence rates are really difficult and shouldn't be counted upon. I want to be clear that masks would still be required under certain circumstances, which are noted on the next slide. The Department of Education is cautioning districts from building in metrics, although I think it would be understandable to be cautious around any future spikes. And I would really want to emphasize that should this be the committee's decision, we would expect that all individuals in our schools be treated respectfully, whether they choose to wear a mask or not to wear one. So some clarifications. Masks would still be required on buses and school transportation. This is a federal order related to transportation. Masks would still be required in health offices. This is per the Department of Public Health for health facilities, and that's what they consider our nurses' offices. Masks would still be required for individuals testing as COVID positive and returning to school from isolation on day 6 or later through day 10. This is per the Department of Public Health and is also part of the CDC protocol, so those would still be required. I will note that the Massachusetts Interscholastic Athletic Association dropped their mask wearing protocols late last week, I want to say. However, mask rules are up to the host school or venue specific rules. So there may be particular venues, and we do sometimes have outside venues that our athletes use, or other host schools, or depending upon your choice, that would be in place. Just to remind everybody around kind of some of the reasons why I think we're at this point, and this is something that Baker and Riley could put out there, is that we've learned a lot. We have evolved our layered mitigation over the course of nearly 2 years. We have high vaccination rates, and I have some data to share with you about Franklin. We have rapid antigen kits for students and staff to use on a weekly basis at home. And we have symptomatic COVID testing in our schools. We have state-of-the-art ventilation. We have UVGI throughout the entire high school, and we have it in all of the common spaces of our other schools. And that's the big unit on the Franklin High School roof on the left. We also have a number of portable HEPA filtration units. There's one in the back of this room and one here. We have smaller ones in offices and larger ones in classroom spaces, and they're rated for the square footage, and the filters are changed on a regular cycle. We continue to have good hand hygiene practices and are asking individuals to monitor their symptoms and stay home when sick. So as you consider this, I want to share some vaccination information by school. The overall vaccination rate in the town of Franklin as of last week was 75%. Our elementary schools are lower in terms of their vaccination rate, ranging from about 55% up to 70%. That number's been, we're still pinning down some of our faculty and staff information, so that number continues to climb a little bit as we get more faculty and staff info. At our middle schools, we have vaccination rates of between about 72% and close to 80%. And Franklin High School is at 86.1%, which is actually higher than it was in November when you had talked about them and optional masking. If interest is high enough, we would consider running another mobile vaccine clinic. We've been in touch with Kathy Liberty in the health office downstairs. They're running a clinic for children ages 5 to 11 next week on February 23rd. Right now, no one has signed up, and they've seen dwindling signups over time. But certainly, if there was enough interest, we would also consider running a mobile clinic, which would bring a bus directly to a school. So we're still collecting some staff data on vaccines across the district. I did not include ECDC, as the ECDC children are too young to be vaccinated, and I didn't want to just put out a staff number. But I just wanted you to know that it was sort of forgotten. It was just sort of we thought it might be interesting too for you to know about, especially in light of the recent spike, the COVID positivity percentages by level in the last 90 days. We do not have this separated out between vaccinated and unvaccinated individuals. I think we could probably add some qualifying information for you. This would involve both. Implication here is that natural immunity would be higher than those numbers that you just saw in terms of the percent vaccinated. I would also point out, I think that there's a lot of folks who are worried about optional masking at ECDC, and what I would share is that they have the lowest percentage of COVID positive students among the district, and probably are some of the most mask non-compliant students because of their ages. So I would just point that out as you consider the information before you. Here's some data on the rapid antigen tests. We have about 37% of students opting in. It is on a consent basis. And we have about 71% of faculty and staff opting in. And there is still the ability to sign up for this. And my understanding is that this program is going to go until about April. I don't know if they plan on extending it, but we do feel like we'll have this in place until at least April. In terms of symptomatic testing, it's kind of reverse. We have 71% of students consenting and opting in for symptomatic testing, and then about 60% of faculty and staff opting in for symptomatic testing. This is also something that people can continue to sign up for, and I think what we end up finding is that people sometimes sign up when they're symptomatic, and we're able to get that consent at that time. I thought I would add a little bit of information because people are talking about one-way masking. We've been living with some data for a couple of years now in terms of the efficacy of different masks and both individuals masking. And so I pulled a quote from Dr. Allen related to people's concerns about one-way masking. And he noted, and it was cited in The Atlantic and in Washington Post recently, that for anyone who fears moving away from universal masking, they can continue to wear N95 masks, which along with being vaccinated and boosted, leaves an individual at a relatively low risk, according to his expert opinion. In terms of our current supply, we have about 24,000 N95 or KN95s. We have far more KN95s than N95s. We do know that there's some additional available at schools. Back in early January, we distributed cases to all of the schools, so they still have some in their supplies, but in storage we have 24,000. So we can continue to supply faculty and staff with KN95s and would encourage families to upgrade their child's mask based on this information. I know that there was some concern around the KN95s that were distributed by the Department of Education. And at the time, the lot that we got was part of the lot that was not tested. It has since been tested by the MIT labs and has a filtration rating of 98%. So they subsequently took care of that, but I'm not sure that message got around. So just to share a little bit of some data with you, again, about COVID cases in Franklin Public Schools. This is as of February 10th, so this was last week's status update on where we are, graphed for you in terms of the cases over the course of the year, and you can see the recent spike. If you've been reading your emails, the COVID numbers continue to decrease on a daily basis here in Franklin. Here's some recent COVID case trends in the town. Chronological cases in the town kind of mirror what I just shared and showed you regarding the COVID cases in the public schools. And then COVID cases by age group is here. And our youngest children, 0 to 4, is this bar. This is ages 5 through 11, 12 through 15, and 16 through 19. And we have a really nice collaboration with the health department and the public health nurse who shares information with us like this on a weekly basis. I know a lot of people are worried about the timing of any potential masks being optional with us heading into February vacation next week, as well as April vacation later this spring. This is data from last year, the arrows representing points in time where we returned from a holiday period. So this first peak here is after Thanksgiving. This second peak here is the week after New Year's, when we returned from school that week. This is after February vacation, and this is after April vacation of last year. So we did not experience the same level of peak that we did after winter break last year. So thought that you might want to know that. And then this is just a quantified. So last year in January, we had a peak of 31 cases in the district the week after we returned. And the percent positivity in Franklin at that time was 7.19%. And then you fast forward to the week after February break, we had 11 cases. The Franklin percent positivity was 1.36. And the week after April vacation was 6 cases with a Franklin positivity of 1.3%. So just some historical data as we proceed here. A couple other considerations that I thought I would mention. One of our suggestions or things that we'd like to offer, it doesn't pertain to your policy per se, but does reflect some feedback that we've had and may seem a little unusual given what you're talking about, but we have been talking internally about shifting away from daily communication about COVID cases to a weekly summary, in the idea that it's a shift in mindset. COVID is all around. People would be assessing their personal risk and making decisions about attendance, things, masking, distancing, and along those lines. And so that is one thing that we wanted to put out there just to be sort of upfront about it. In terms of metrics, like I had said, the Department of Education is cautioning us away from metrics, and I had shared that I think there's less reliability on some of the ones that we've been using. But what we could do is we could continue to monitor attendance internally. Families are asked to communicate with the nurses about children's absences, so we would have some information there. And we have some good baseline data since January about attendance rates in our schools. We started to collect that on a weekly basis. And at the peak of our absences in January, about 15% of students and 9% of staff were out. That's district-wide. There were certainly some peaks that were higher in some schools than that. And now, as we are in mid-February, that has dropped, and we've been pretty consistent with 5% and 5% over the past couple of weeks. Decisions by area schools. It's a little hard to pinpoint precise information. I think there has been a little bit of misinformation, which way different districts are going and whether or not they've had a meeting and a vote. What I will share is that the charter school in town approved masks being optional last week, beginning February 28th. I do get the sense that many other area communities are making masks optional in their schools, and the variability that I'm hearing about is the date. And some are starting, for example, on March 7th to get through the week after the mutation. That being said, we might not be hearing about schools that are continuing to mask because they might not have any change to make because they already have a policy in place. As I had noted, the kit test kits, people can still opt in for both the rapid antigen test kits and the symptomatic testing program. We would be happy to speak with individuals, students or faculty and staff, about any individual accommodations they may feel they need if they have a condition that puts them at risk. And as I had noted, there's a COVID vaccine clinic for students, for children ages 5 through 11 being held in town at the Senior Center on February 8th. So those are a couple data points and some considerations that I've shared with the school committee. There is a, as I had noted, a sample MASC policy, and depending upon how you, Chairperson Spencer, how you want this conversation to go, I can bring that up, or you can ask questions or make comments. But I do have the policy.
And you had highlighted the basic summary of the policy in the presentation. So.
Yep.
But I just want to just put the community. So what we're going to do now is we're going to make a motion in a second before we can have a discussion. So is there a motion to adopt the recommendation from Dr. Sarah Hearn?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Now we'll have a discussion. Camille. On the recommendation from Dr. Hearn.
I just wanted to ask if people could stop talking because it's really distracting.
So distracting.
But I know you have to ask that, not me.
All right, so everyone could just keep the side check. All right, questions, comments?
My questions were addressed with ECPC and then also the other districts that are opting for a March 7th date. I appreciate the data about February and April 2021, and also the surge after 2021 December, because it is a different variant, and also there was much less travel a year ago. People weren't able to travel like they can now. So that remains a concern coming back right after February vacation, seeing if the spike would happen again. That's it.
Dave Callahan?
Yeah, a couple comments to say.
Yep, comments, questions? This is your time to do it.
All right. First, Dr. Hearn, thank you so much for putting that together. And I want to thank everybody for those in attendance here, listening online, and also watching at home, and for the almost 200 emails that we had received. I know I personally had read them all, and I'm sure everyone had done the same as well. Really do try to listen to and value all the comments on it. One thing I wanted to say, to actually kind of open up a quote, this is from the president of the Massachusetts Medical Society, Dr. Carol and she states that cautiously relaxing in-school masking mandates, given recent encouraging public health metrics, is appropriate at this time, but we must watch local metrics closely and be prepared to swiftly reinstate all proven preventative measures if the number of positive cases spike in school or communities. And this was released last Wednesday to coincide with the governor's statement as well. The vote here tonight, regardless of how it shakes down, isn't a vote to state that COVID's over, because it's far from it. But instead, what brought us here for this special committee right now is to state, to illustrate the progress that we've had since March of 2020. We've learned so much. We've had vaccinations. We know so many different ways to treat and tackle this virus that has killed almost a million Americans. And while I understand that DESE at this moment doesn't want to tie any metrics in place to the policy, and I think that we can still certainly make a vote on the policy as it stands right now, I think work still needs to be done by this committee after the fact, just to ensure that we can properly find out if there is going to be another Omicron-like surge that's going to take out, you know, 15% of our students and put them in quarantine. So that we can kind of readily identify if a surge like that is coming and also figure out how to respond properly to keep our children and our community as safe as possible. In terms of keeping ourselves and our community safe, I was glad to see that we have a vaccine clinic coming to the senior center, and it'll be fantastic if we can move forward with a mobile clinic as well to the schools. And for any individuals who may be hesitant to get themselves or their children vaccinated, I really urge you to talk to your doctors, talk to your kiddos' pediatricians. They have gone to school and worked and have learned an incredible amount of information to get to the position that they're in. And I'm sure that they would happily engage you and answer any questions that you might have about the vaccine. Lastly, too, I just want to say, and I'll keep this short, this isn't the last big decision this community has facing. Effectively, COVID has hit the pause button on so many of these big issues. The reason why I'm sitting in this position here wasn't because of COVID, but was because of budgetary issues that are coming down the pipeline for this community. We have a national teacher shortage that's going to make it truly difficult to attract and retain the highest quality staff that we can. We have a lower student population growth that's really going to make it difficult for us to be able to make hard choices and look at what our district does and represents and how best to get a great education from our kiddos. I say that in order to best work for move forward, we all have to work together. Be able to live together, to listen to one another, be able to bring Franklin forward and continue to do great by our community and our children as well. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Al?
Hi, Dr. Hearn, first and foremost, thank you for putting together the idea. I think it's been helpful to see the rationale of why the decision was made. I guess I have a few questions around if we can move forward, what really happened. So I guess first to start, can you just speak to what is that process if the student tests positive? Like, what happens and what's the life cycle? Just to frame that up.
Sure. So I'm going to ask Paula to share a little bit about that. I think more than anything at this point, the COVID protocols don't change in terms of students testing positive. There is still an expectation for DPH and CDC that the student isolate for 5 days, allowed to return on day 6 as long as symptoms are improving. And in that case, a mask would be required. I don't know if Paula wants to add any more.
That's accurate. So a mask will be required until day 10. We do get notification. Obviously, our school nurses will know when kids test positive, so we'll have to, make sure that, parents and the student understand that they will have to wear their masks during that time.
And that would pertain to a positive symptomatic or asymptomatic case.
Correct.
There's still the same isolation.
Thank you. And then for the students that are in that classroom, how do they get cared for to make sure that they had not caught COVID? Like, are they communicated to test and then I guess what does that play?
So we've stopped contact tracing with the rapid antigen test kits, and I think the message would be the same in terms of having families monitor their children for symptoms. And we would do symptomatic testing or, kind of on that weekly basis. The Wednesday suggestion for that antigen test is purposeful in terms of a weekend exposure or that's kind of a purposeful time frame that we're suggesting people test with those antigen kits.
And then, I guess I know you've mentioned around the vaccine clinics and then trying to get more folks to participate in that. What are our plans to ensure that we widen the net, communicate to folks that this is available and just give them the opportunity to take that if they choose to do so?
So we haven't run a clinic in some time. We did it last year. I think what I am interested in is surveying families to see if they would be interested in a mobile clinic coming out. I think there is a threshold that we need to meet in order to bring it to the schools that may help reduce some barriers to access if there is a clinic on site. And then I think especially for the younger students, family, we would kind of arrange it so that families can come and attend the vaccination. But I think we would start with surveying families to gauge the interest.
And then lastly, I know we're not setting a metric to change course, but what happens if, we pass this policy and we see large numbers of absences, teachers and staff, students and teachers? I guess, what's our process to kind of revisit this discussion?
So the committee could choose to revisit it. Policy is something that is kind of constantly under review. So it could be something that you continue to revisit. In one metric, I don't have a numerical figure in mind, but again, that wastewater component is a leading indicator. I'd have to learn more about it, and that, just kind of hoping that Department of Education or DPH would put something forward to schools to help with this decision, but they didn't. But wastewater could be something promising to look at as a leading indicator if there were to be a potential surge, and you could certainly continue to review this in the policy subcommittee and then bring it back to the full committee. We didn't go to policy sub just because of timing here. We thought it would be better to talk as a full committee.
Thank you.
First and foremost, thank you very much, Dr. Hearn, for putting this together. This is it's been quite a bit these past 2 weeks, and thank you for putting this together. I want to thank you also for reiterating the ventilation that we see in schools, because that's is also very helpful for creating a safe environment for our students and our teachers. And I think we can all find comfort in the fact that we have high vaccination rates and that cases are coming down and with the wastewater. And as was touched upon by my fellow members here, thank you for noting that still providing for vaccine clinics if there's no desire for it. It's excellent that we do have the vaccination rates that we do have. And I think the MASC model policy is reasonable that would allow for vaccinated students to go on mass. And thank you for presenting this to us. And as was touched upon by my fellow members, in terms of that metric with no longer having just to reiterate what we were saying with revisiting, the best way probably to stay flexible would be to revisit this in policy subcommittee or with the full committee in case we do find another variant comes down the line that we do believe this would be necessary.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, both are possibilities, whether it comes up at a full committee meeting or with policy first, the policy subcommittee, definitely be able to review it regularly.
Okay, thank you. And I guess just a quick question. Do we have any sense of what in-school transmission has been like? Or I know that's extremely hard considering the Yeah, people, students are, of course, in the community with families, and we really have no idea to say for certain, but do we have any sense of that?
It's been tricky to pin down. Certainly in last year when we were hybrid, there was, we have no evidence of in-school transmission. We did know through contact tracing, both this year and last year, you know, kind of where some of the, not 100%, but especially last year, it did seem to be, you know, kind of at home, with families. This year, with everybody being in person, there were a couple of instances where we were concerned related to a particular classroom or related to a particular grade. I would probably say, single digits, I can probably count them on one hand. And we called the DPH, epidemiologist, who kind of talked us through more detailed contact tracing to see if we could identify it. But their recommendation was always the same, which was to test the entire class or the entire team. And so that's what we did. But it was really, really a very small number of times where we had that. So I think in terms of in-school transmission, I think it's been very limited. And we never had a cluster that was identified as coming from in-school. Things happen outside, birthday parties, lots of other events where children are connected to each other or family members. And so I think the best majority have been outside school.
Well, that's also, of course, encouraging here, so thank you for that. And yeah, I mean, that's, for the fact that the best way to handle infection and transition is to get vaccinated, I think this policy is reasonable to me, and also support us having flexibility later on to reinstate masks if we believe it necessary at different times. So, thank you.
If I could just ask everyone if you could just silence your cell phone. Elise?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm very distractible, and I feel like this is an important topic, and I need to be focusing and distracted by some notifications. So thank you, everybody, for making sure your cell phone is off. Dr. Hearn, do we have any data to show that Franklin is at a higher risk than other nearby communities as far as COVID?
I don't have any indication that would be the case.
Okay. Do you see any benefit in waiting a week or two after February vacation to officially shift the mask policy? I know you showed us the data from 2021, and as was said earlier, I think it was Camille, there are more travel restrictions. So just wondering sort of your thoughts logistically in the school, if we wait till March 7th for the next week, do you benefit to that?
The reality of human behavior is that with the potential for masks being optional, we're seeing less compliance of mask wearing, and so no longer the decision goes from the implementation of decision. I think the harder it is to sort of enforce the current policy.
I just want to tell you too, we did not really see a spike in cases after Columbus Day weekend either, so I think that's a good indication, because I know a lot of people were traveling after Columbus Day weekend, and we really didn't see a huge spike in there too.
That's true.
And as well as Martin Luther King weekend, sorry.
Or Halloween.
So.
Okay, thank you. What are your thoughts on tracking the virus in schools moving forward? So we're not doing contact tracing anymore, right?
We are not.
We will still be getting notified, obviously, when there are positive cases, when there's in close contacts within their, students are identified in close contact with their household or anything like that. So I will continue, the nurses and I will continue to track that. And we will be, as Dr. Hearn suggested, communicating weekly on a weekly basis of positive cases.
Okay,
and I believe we're still reporting to DESE as well on a weekly basis.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Hearn, for your presentation. So, a lot of stuff to consider all this, and I know we're just at at the heels of this, our Omicron spike that we had. I'd have concerns about there being a back and forth masks and maybe coming on and off or something like that. You know, we've been at our house for a while now, but COVID's been with us for some time. And what I would, be in support of this is like, having some time to like wait a little bit or not be rash about thinking about it. I don't want to say rash, but just being quick about it. I think, possibly sort of like sandbagging if there's any trends in other districts or parts of the state, I'm not saying a long time, but just like maybe, in March, end of March, just see how things are going. It's just something that I think could be a good idea. That's all I'm
saying. You want to go again?
Yes. Is that okay?
I saw you waving. Yes.
Is that okay? Okay. I just want to make a short statement. To a person, my colleagues on this committee have acted with integrity and compassion, humility and common sense, and within the law, and guided by the ethical considerations of our positions. As Dave said, we received over 200 messages in just the last couple of days, and I too read every single one. And our hardworking chair, Denise, answered every single one. The comments from citizens covered the entire spectrum of opinions, from lifting the mask mandate to keeping it in place. And across that spectrum, citizens shared poignant stories of how their children and families have struggled during this pandemic. We have, after all, both individually and as a community, suffered trauma of some kind, and every single one of us wants to recover as best we can. I want to commend all of the community members who worked to mitigate the effects of this pandemic on our neighbors and our vulnerable population. For the past 2 years, I've seen the best of what humans can do and be towards each other, and also, sadly, some of the worst. So thank you to those of you who reached out with your opinions wherever you fell on the spectrum, and to those who reached out merely to support us during this challenging time. I appreciated the viewpoints and the arguments. They appealed to logos, pathos, ethos, the ideas and angles I hadn't even considered. To be sure, many of the emails and conversations I've had with fellow citizens have really helped clarify my own thinking about this complex and nuanced decision we have in front of us. What did not move me, what did not convince me, were the small percentage of you who resorted to insults or aggression, name-calling, intimidation, or threats of legal action. Let it be known that if the vote tonight results in the mandate being lifted, this is not a victory for those of you who harassed us, bullied us, insulted us, those of you who made a sport of ugliness, a circus of civic engagement. This is not capitulation. Your tactics did nothing to serve your ostensible purpose to advocate for your children. You simply outed yourselves as uncivilized and unkind, and I'm grateful that it's just a tiny percentage of the good people in this town. Excuse me.
What?
It was a cough. When I'm at my most charitable and compassionate and empathetic, which is my job every day as a teacher, I recognize that, like everyone else, you were scared and you were trying to wrest some control in a situation where many of us felt no control. And of course, I understand the parental desire to advocate for your children, but that does not excuse the ugliness of your behavior. My hope is that at the end of this, you might reflect on your coping skills and the example you set for your own children. Treating other humans disrespectfully, even inhumanely, is not the answer, especially if we're to recover from this ordeal as a community. I really don't know the outcome of this vote, but whatever the outcome, I know that it will have been made because it's the best possible situation, sorry, decision given the situation, all things considered. And it will have been made because each of us on this committee, the superintendent, and the administrators in this district considered the best data that we could gather, assess the situation at hand, and adapted as needed given the changing environment. I support every decision this committee made and the superintendent made before I was elected, and I support our actions since being sworn in. I'd like to conclude with recognizing our chair, Denise Spencer, and our superintendent, Dr. Ahern, both of whom have acted with the utmost civility and professionalism under impossible circumstances. You are top-notch professionals, and I'm grateful to know and learn from you. Thank you.
Thank you, Camille. So I just have one very quick thing. So I would just like to thank the hundreds of individuals who sent the committee emails over the past few days. We respect the level of parental involvement and appreciate that every parent wants what they think is best for their child. But our decision is not being swayed by the extreme vocal minority or threats. We are invested in the best interest of the district students, families, and employees, a premise that has remained and will remain consistent. Unfortunately, as we've seen over the last 2 years, COVID is ever changing. We've had variants with less transmissibility and worse outcomes, extremely transmissible variants with a reduction in severe outcomes, and every variation in between. Whatever the outcome tonight and in future weeks, the likelihood is that mandatory masking will soon be lifted. This is not a correction. It is recognition that while our stances have remained consistent, the data has changed. It would be imprudent to move ahead without acknowledging the possibility that the data will change once again and again and again, that an unexpected variant may become prominent, or that these and other anticipated factors will again have us examining our policies in the fall or even sooner. If and when that happens, we hope that the community understands that we will continue the consistency that we've shown to this point, a continuation of our policy of following the guidelines and examine all available information to do what's in the best interest of the students and families living and working in Franklin. Okay, anyone else? All right, so we have a motion and a second. No further discussion, so we'll take a roll call.
Can I make a motion to...
Do you want to make a motion to amend Dr. Ahern's recommendation for February 28th?
Yeah, could we discuss it to specifically. So when is the return date for this February vacation?
February 28th.
Let's say 2 weeks after.
So the 14th?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. So is there a motion to amend the recommendation by Dr. Ahern? Is there a motion to...
So I think you'd be looking, so I think Ms. Whitmore made the motion to amend the date, and okay. We'd be asking for a second.
Okay. Hold it. Okay, is there a second? Seeing none. The vote will come back to the original motion.
I would like to make a motion to amend it to the 7th of March.
Okay. All right. So we have a motion to amend to the 7th.
Yep.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Roll call will come on the vote for March 7th. All right. Camille?
Yes.
Dave?
Yes.
Al?
Nay.
Dave McNeil? Elise Stokes?
No.
Megan Whitmore?
Yes.
All right, Denise is a no. All right, not Carrie. So we'll go back to the original recommendation of February 28th. We have a second and a motion. Roll call will come on the vote. Camille Bernstein?
Yes.
Okay, Dave Callahan?
Yes.
Al Charles?
Yes.
Dave McNeil?
Yes.
Elise Stokes?
Yes.
Megan Whitmore? And Spencer, yes. All right, Carrie. All right. So, yes, just one further thing. So this decision just one final comment from me, and then we'll adjourn and get out of town council's way. So this decision is not a win for those whose only goals is to obstruct and impede this committee. This has been a very difficult and polarizing conversation. There are strong feelings on both sides. The divisiveness resulting from this issue has taken a huge toll in this community. I hope we can move ahead and change this conversation. The community needs to realize masking is not the only pressing issue facing Franklin Public Schools. We have to replace a wonderful superintendent. We're working on strategic plans for schools, possible redistricting, and it's all during a hot budget season. So everyone, please stay informed, stay tuned. All right, do we have a motion to adjourn?
No move.
Second.
Second.
All right, roll call vote, Camille.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.